first year, we're with Jeff Krill, member of the U.S. national team specializing in adaptive. Jeff, what is it that makes a really qualitative adaptive ski school?
Well, you know what makes any ski school is that you have a foundation in education and that you actually really want to teach people how to ski. So many people getting involved with adaptive and they think that it's going to be about giving people just an experience and a ride down the mountain and that these people need help. Well, you know, if somebody had done that for me, I would never have been able to ski the entire mountain. I'm not on a string all the time because I can be a skier. Somebody taught me how to ski and put the time in. And because of that, look where I've evolved to. You know, I'm skiing around everywhere in the world, traveling around with the U.S. Adaptive team. And it's pretty incredible, you know, to have that kind of experience from a sit ski. You know, who would have thought? And that's all because people put the time into teaching me how to ski. And I want that for anybody, regardless of what their ability is. If, you know, if they can only move their head, they can still make their own turns. We explore what people are capable of, not just give them a ride and an experience down the hill.
So what is it that makes someone a good adaptive instructor?
It's actually somebody that understands skiing first. You know, one of the things I always say is understand alpine or snowboard first, and then you adapt. You have to understand the own way that you ski or ride first before you start adapting things on how different movements happen from either outriggers or because, you know, lack of mobility in one leg, because you have an amputation and now, you know, so you need to understand what it takes to turn, bend, twist, and tip a ski or a snowboard. That's how you become a really good, solid ski or ride instructor, is that you understand your own sport, the movements associated with that, bringing it back to what the fundamentals of that are, and then you're able to adapt it to all the different disabilities and types of things that are and equipment that's out there going on.
How do we adapt our mindset? I mean, you said disability. You see someone in a wheelchair, on a walker, and first reaction, I think, from a lot of people is you want to treat that person with kid gloves.
Yeah, well, you know,
I've got you out on snow sliding. Oh, my gosh, I don't want to hurt you.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things is that, you know, disabled people aren't fragile, too, you know. And it's pretty funny, like a lot of the guys that, you know, I work with, there's a reason why they ended up in a wheelchair or something like that in the first place. They're a little crazy or a little nuts. But then there's, you know, there's other sides to and different types of disability besides mine. But, yes, you know, there is a certain amount of kid gloves with anybody, and you take a child out on the hill for the first time. You know, we don't just send them, bring them to the top and send them. You know, you see parents who are out there throwing a racer chaser or a tether on their kids. Is that the best way to teach a kid? I don't believe so. You know, you need to let them experience things that you need. You put them on the appropriate terrain and you teach them the right way. If you have that knowledge base on how to get them to turn, you're going to be able to get the best things out of them. You know, you can't be afraid of that people are going to fall, because we all fall at different points in our life. I've had individuals who it was the first time in their life when they got out on a sit ski of some type, and they fell, and they're like, let's do that again, because they'd never been given that opportunity as a disabled person to fall, and they enjoyed the falling almost more than the skiing or riding, because they'd never had that impact or that kind of touch or that sort of outside power happen to them. Does that make sense?
Totally,
you know, like
does.
They'd never had those little falls and those trips and the excitement of what that is, and they wanted to feel that. So they're like, well, make me fall. Can we just go fall over? Can you tip me over? And I'm like, no, we're not doing that again. You know?
Now, I think we're in for a real treat here, because a lot of us are going to be going through getting in a sit ski for the first time. I want you to treat me with kid... No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. No, well, of course we're treating you with kid gloves, but, you know, we're putting you through a progression that's going to help you learn and the right movements associated with how to turn the ski. You know, we start on flats, we do our flat drills, we do our dry land, you know, stuff, and we get in the ski, and we get you turning, doing your first straight run to a stop, making a J-turn, whatever it may be, and, you know, and once we feel that you're doing that, we're going to start moving you on up the hill. The progression does not change. It's the same thing that you do with any standard two-track stand-up skier. Skiing is what I always say, and you need to relate it back to that and realize that that's the foundation of everything that happens in the adaptive world.
It's really good skiing.
Yeah, simple as that. You know, people try to make it too complicated because it's adaptive, and they look at this equipment and it's fancy and shiny and big, and they think it's got to be man versus metal or something crazy like that. It's not. You know, all the same movement patterns apply to it. You don't need to overpower that machine. You just need to ski it, and you need to do it subtly. You tip a ski, you know, just like a quarter inch on edge, you're making a turn. You know, it doesn't take very much to get a ski on edge and get it making a turn. So the same things apply. You don't need to power it. You don't need to muscle it. Very subtle movements, and less is more.
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right, I'm looking forward to a very fun afternoon. Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, you bet. I'm excited to take you out.
So we're here with Bruce Bennett, who's on a mono ski.
Trying to stay alive.
Trying to move around. How do you feel?
I feel trapped.
How many years have you been skiing?
13.
So what's it like for you to get into something like this, which is totally different?
There it is. It's, you realize what your students are going through, is that, because now you are limited in your movements, and because your balance on a single ski, you really have to think about your balance, and, it's a lot of upper body strength to be able to move yourself around, especially in the soft snow. But if it's harder snow, you can spin it around a lot easier.
What's your home mountain?
Liberty Mountain, Gettysburg, Pennsylvania.
And are you interested in teaching adaptive?
I am an adaptive instructor. I'm one module away from my level two. So one of the things that I think makes you a better adaptive instructor is if you get the chance to get in the equipment and feel what your students are going through. It helps you better relate, as well as give them tips. And oftentimes we will ski with them in a mono ski as they begin their lessons. So we demo in a mono ski. That seems to help.
How many years had you taught standard skiing before you got into adaptive?
Actually, I started in adaptive as a volunteer for about 3 years. And then in 2009, I became a qualified instructor in level one that same year. So, but I'd already been volunteering as an adaptive for 3 years before that.
I'll look forward to spending the afternoon with you.
Well, thank you, George.
Thanks, Bruce.
You having trouble pushing? And push backwards?
There you go.
So, Jeff, you have a person on dual skis under his seat, and you have people on a mono ski. What's the difference?
So, really, you know, would be when you're teaching different people with disabilities, you know, you have some, that obviously the bi-ski that we have here sits a little lower to the snow, so that's for lower center of gravity, maybe a more involved injury, less balance, not as athletic possibly at sometimes. You know, when you talk about spinal cord injuries, they've got a higher level, so they don't have as much core function higher up on their chest, not as much strength in their arms. So being lower to the ground is a better machine for them. Then we've got some guys in mono skis, which has suspension, a little bit more athletic, higher up. You're able to self-load it, can ski anywhere on the mountain. And bi-ski can get out there on most things too, but it is for somebody that has a more involved injury for the most part. But the progression in the way that we're teaching it here today is all towards independence. So we're doing flatland drills and all those things, and it's exactly the same progression to start with.
And we don't have video, we're all audio, so tell us a little bit about the progression you're doing.
So right now I have them playing around with basically their skating drills, our flatland drills. They're pushing around, they're doing some circles, having them do figure eight so they get how the machine feels when it's sliding on the snow, how it comes around a corner a little bit. But they're realizing that it doesn't take a lot of edge to turn it. It happens with flat ski rotary and steering. So next step, you know, after they've gotten a little comfortable with this, I'm going to have them do a straight run so they can feel that they're balanced in the ski and that they can just stay right on that ski in a very flat, right to a natural run out. After that, I'm going to actually show them how their outriggers are their steering or rotary mechanism and how that draws them into their turn when they turn it the direction they want to go. And then it starts to link a few turns together and onwards up the lift. Hopefully we get in a few turns here. So, you know, these guys are all able-bodied and understand skiing, so sometimes that can be a good thing. Sometimes it can be a bad thing.
That could be a drawback.
Exactly, because sometimes people think that they need to edge and lean and tip. No, we focus on steering and rotary. I teach them to balance, I teach them to glide, and I teach them how to steer.
And what you're doing there is perfect. So you're keeping that ski nice and flat?
Yeah.
Believe it or not, that's actually, so many people think that you get into one of these skis and you're going to go lean and tip. But think about if you did that on your regular stand-up skis. You just fall right over. Yeah, there's a steering component to it. So how does that accomplished? And that's with the outrigger.
So it's steering early.
Yeah.
And then later on, edging and...
Exactly. Edging actually happens as a result of turning across the fall line. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Second, you start to come across the hill, you've already started to edge. So I try not to talk too much about edging because that gets people thinking about leaning and tipping.
Yeah.
And I don't want that in the beginning. I really want flat ski rotary skills developed here because that's where we're going to be able to progress up from. You have to need to realize that you tip that ski, you know, a tiny little bit, quarter of an inch, if not even that much, and that thing's turning.
It's on edge.
Yeah, exactly. So,
you know, is it a matter of philosophy? Because at Courage Kenny, all the bi skis are tethered.
No, it can be. So it also depends upon the person, what their abilities are, what their goals are. There's an interview process to it. But, I would say as a whole, one of the things that I'm trying to change a lot in the bi ski culture is I feel too many people are thrown into a bi ski. They put a tether on them and they say, hey, we can just go up the lift and head up there instead of putting the work in down below. And then they never get off that string because what they learn is edging first. They're given a ride. They have a person behind it that's their brake.
Yeah.
And now when you bring them back to the lower slopes and say, hey, let's work at this and get you independent, they're like, I just want to go back up on the mountain.
Yeah.
But they could have been up there and being independent. So it's important to start with the basics first.
Yeah.
Now, Jeff, you've got everyone going uphill backwards.
Right.
This looks like a lot of upper body work.
Well, it's actually easier to push backwards than it is to push forwards. In this position, you're able to use your biceps and push because your outriggers are forward of you. And when you have your arms behind you and you're trying to push uphill, you actually lose a lot of strength. So it's just like you're in a push-up position, one after another, and kind of like rowing back up the hill.
I'm thinking of standing with ski poles. You want the poles back behind your heels when you're going forward.
Yeah.
Here you've got them in their toes and they're going backwards.
Because it's your arms and it's just a different muscle group and they're stronger going forward than they are backwards.
So again, it's just a ski lesson.
Yeah, it really is. And here we got a guy coming to us.
So Thane Swisher, it was really interesting watching you do your straight run. Was there any urge from you to try to edge your ski rather than just steer with your outriggers?
Not really. Not after yesterday's practice. You learn to use the outriggers.
Was the first time you tried it, though, did you want to try to get onto an edge? Was that your natural inclination?
That's a natural inclination, but it's just a little different balance.
Yeah, it was interesting to watch you just run straight, and then you started steering your outriggers and made a left turn.
Yeah, these apparently just ride flat for the most part. At least that's what I'm experiencing. And to turn them, you turn outriggers, and they do turn.
Thanks, Zane. This may be a dumb question, but you've got a shock absorber in your seat.
Sure.
Or in the seat post.
Right.
So if you're in bumps, deeper snow, and there's some give there, what happens if the footbed for your shoes into the snow? Does that happen?
They don't. It happens more when you're creating really large angles. Like, you know, I can show you how when I'm tipped over and then you get that bend of the ski.
Oh, okay.
There's just like you would boot out, I can foot rest out, or I can actually, on steeper terrain, bucket out and hit the side of my bucket as a possibility too, and that can knock you out of a turn as well. But the shock absorber is there to provide a couple of different things. Not only more connectivity to the snow, just like your legs are doing all the time, and it also provides flexion extension. So as I move across the ski and get long as I'm extending into the new turn, that shock absorber is getting long too. So just like your legs get long and short at different points of the turn, my shock helps me in extending into different turns too all the time. Make sense?
Totally.
Yeah.
So, Jeff, first chair ride is pretty momentous for any ski lesson. How's that work for Adaptive?
Well, for anybody, you know, it's there's a lot of anxiety in that first chairlift ride. But at the same time, it's pretty cool for a lot of folks that maybe were skiers beforehand. You know, that moment of being back on the hill and on the chairlift kind of like brings you back to where you were before. And that can be a game changer for a lot of moments in their life. You know, it's one of the things in Adaptive, you teach a lot more than skiing. Skiing is sort of it's a stepping stone to all the other accomplishments that you're going to make as a disabled individual. Because once you've conquered this and you conquer the mountain and you're like, wow, I can ski and ride down a mountain, your level of independence and the way you approach things really changes as a person. So there's a lot more to it than than just getting somebody to slide for the first time. It's a psychological thing in the way they're going to take on the rest of their life. It's important to me, and that first lesson, that's why adaptive needs more training and more expertise. It's not just giving people rides. It's really about us being able to transcend into something that's bigger and more special. It is a point where you can make a difference in somebody's life that's depression because I used to do this and now I can't and the lesson sucked and they're miserable and they're unhappy, or you can make the decision that you have a successful lesson and you get them out loving the mountain again and they feel like they're doing it and they're a part of it and they're back with their friends and family and now they're like, well, you know what, maybe I can't walk or maybe I lost a leg, and but you know what, I'm back on the mountain, so things are pretty cool. And that sort of mentality starts to go into a lot of other aspects of their life. I know it did for me. It was huge. It's one reason why this is my career and my job. You treat it like a surgery every time because I know what that first lesson can mean.
Glad we're having the chance to do this. We really need to recruit more people to teach adaptive.
Yeah, we do. And it's also them understanding that the importance is a lot more than just getting somebody out on the hill, that you can actually make a difference in their overall drive towards life again and what that can be.
Jeff Krill joining us on First Chair from Snowbird, Utah. I'm George Thomas.